Your name, please.
My name is John E. Hines.
And your occupation and position?
I am a clergyman, the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in the United States of America.
Bishop Hines, 10 years ago, religion was booming. New churches were going up on almost every street corner. Membership was growing. Budgets were expanding. Now all that has changed. In your viewpoint, why has this come about?
My viewpoint is that this has come about because the world which confronts the church and which the church confronts is a different world today from that of the world of 10 years ago.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is the Right Reverend John E. Hines, presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in the United States. Here is today's moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Robert Libby. Mr. Libby.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Bishop John E. Hines. In what way has the world changed in the last 10 years?
Perhaps the most important way in which the world has changed is the result of two things. First, the discovery of and the release of nuclear power, which altered the concept of power necessary to live in this world. And the second is the speed of communication between peoples and nations in this world, which altered the whole scene of cultural development and of human progress.
Bishop Hines, Vatican advisor John Cardinal Wright was recently quoted in U.S. News and World Report as saying that the church is going into a winter season, a winter of Christianity, a winter of belief. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, knowing him a little more than casually, as I do, I would tend generally to agree with what I think his thesis is, namely that Christian belief and the church's confidence in itself and the view of the church from outside are shoring up for difficult months and difficult years ahead. That there is, in a way, less spontaneity about the religious scene than perhaps there has been in the institutional church in some years gone by. That there is less confidence in the authority of the church's position wherever it is, and less confidence that when the church speaks authoritatively, it has firm groundings for its spoken and acted word. Therefore, this means, in my view, that the church will have little surcease from the pressures and tensions which are upon it, both internal and external, and must continue to live on the knife edge and the frontier of great decisions which it must make, and I trust make together in all the Christian areas for the good of itself and for the benefit of the world.
Can you give us an example of the kinds of knife-edge decisions the church is going to face?
Well, I think one knife-edge decision is whether or not the church is going to live primarily for and in the world or primarily for itself. To me, this means that there must be less and less emphasis on the part of the church on her own institutional organization and fabric, and more on open, sometimes perilous involvement with the desperate human needs which are all about the church. In other words, the church must take the risk, which is implicit in the gospel, of losing her life for the sake of the life of men. This is not an easy decision to make. This means total commitment. From now on, the church must look to the spiritual resources which only God's Holy Spirit can give the church for the power to move in mission in this world.
terms of responding to desperate human need, how does the church respond, for instance, to the racial crisis that's in front of the nation today?
Well, the church probably responds in several different ways. Again, it's difficult to generalize, but thinking of our own church, the Episcopal Church, I would say, again, there are two or three fronts on which this response is being made, and I think will continue to be made. The first one is for the church at its local level, in its parishes, in its missionary congregations, and so forth, to, one, be aware of the sin of racism, which infects, again, every human institution in a largely white-powered, white-dominated structure, such as is true of the United States of America today. The great plural majority of our people is that of white persons, so that our minority people are largely non-white. Now, when we face this kind of situation and begin to understand its corruptions and begin to see the injustices in which these corruptions issue, then the church must be as sure as it possibly can that its gospel of justice and equality and mercy is worked out in the individual lives of people who are the communicants of the church. And that racism as an ill of humankind, and especially of white superiority inclined people, is at least reduced as much as possible, and if it's possible, done away with. Then, in sort of a national church way, I can only think, for example, of the attempt of our church nationally to produce and implement what's called the General Convention Special Program, which came from the General Convention of Seattle in 1967. And here, a specific program mounted by finances contributed by the great body of the church through its national church budget, attempts to empower minorities, principally impoverished minorities in the society to which we belong.
How has this program worked out? Can you give me some specific examples of the kind of programs that help empower minorities?
Well, I think I can give you three or four principles on which the program is mounted, and perhaps mention just a very few of the specific situations in which it is engaged. Its first principle is that there are powerless people in our culture and in our country who have little or no say in their destiny. Meaning that the kind of lives they lead, the kind of economic situation in which they are cast, the kind of ghetto areas in which they are compelled to leave, deprive them of a voice in the decision-making areas which affect them and affect the whole country. Therefore, the General Convention Special Program aims at providing as many of these people as possible with the resources or some resources, both financial and those of skilled personnel, so that they can organize, and in organizing promote a kind of self-determination which puts them perhaps not on a par, because that's too high a hope, but at least puts them in the arena of the decision-making aspects of their life so that they can have a say and can be heard. Now, most of this operates in what we call community organizations. And what the church attempts to do is to provide financial resources for programs of community organization, which are themselves framed by the recipients of the finances, by the poor themselves, by the minority groups. Now, this brings about conflict in some areas. People who are not accustomed to exercising this kind of power often have difficulty exercising it wisely. People who are in the power structure seats often have fears that some people who are in a way uncultured, unknowledgeable as they think, unskilled and inexperienced, they have fears about what these people might do when they have power themselves. And so this raises tensions in the life of the church. But on the other hand, it also exhibits or demonstrates in a small way that there are people in the Christian church who care about what's happening to the poverty-stricken, ghetto-based, rural ghetto, as well as urban ghetto-based people in our community.
On a personal level, what are the things that sustain you as an individual?
Well, it sounds like a cliche in a way, but I'm sustained as I have always been sustained by my confidence and profound belief that Christ is the light and hope of the world. That there is no other factor in human experience and in history which is comparable to Jesus Christ in human life as a resource, both for stability in a good sense of that word and also for despair in a good sense of that word. Because it is Christ who makes us deeply conscious of our vast shortcomings individually and corporately. And when we are aware of those vast shortcomings, then we know how we must rely on some power, not ourselves. And it is Christ who supplies the kind of power and the kind of strength which is necessary in order to try to be a genuinely human person in relationships at such a time as this.
Thank you very much, Bishop Johnny Hines, for being our guest and for giving us your viewpoint.
Thank you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and the Council of Churches of the City of New York, as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was the Right Reverend John E. Hines, presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in the United States.